So we're keeping pace. That's good. We're holding the third parak of brachas. The whole parak tonight. Thank you so much. Okay, so we're holding the third parak of brachas at the beginning, and Bez Hashem will get to the end. So it says Mishnah. This is the last parak dealing with the Kriya Shema, and really we're getting already. So we've been talking about the being putter from Kriya Shema. And really all mitzvahs. We said last night we were focused on the, let's call it the lesser patur, the bigger chiddush of the patur, which is that even if you just have a tirid in a mitzvah, meaning if you just psychologically involved in doing a mitzvah, right, like the chassan on the first night before his wedding, assuming he's wearing a basula, and so until he consummates the wedding or 4 days, he is nervous and therefore he's got an exemption, a technical exemption. And now we're going to explore just the more usual case of what's called osik b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah. If you're involved in doing any mitzvah, so then you're exempt from any other mitzvah, one at a time. So it says inside, misha mesa mutu lefanav. One who has his mace, one of his Zion Krov, one of his seven relatives died, and is a mitzvah vura. So as long as they're literally mutu lefanav means lying there before him, but it means that the mace is unburied. And therefore, he has an obligation to be metapel with the mace. He has an obligation to deal with the whatever it takes to get the mace and to bury the dead. So then he's osik b'mitzvah. He's involved in that mitzvah. So then he's pater. Pater from Kriya Shema. He'll be pater from Kriya Shema. Umina tefillah, and also tefillah prayer. Umina tefillin, and also putting on tefillin. And the girsa in the mishnah we have in the Bavli is, and all the mitzvahs in the Torah. Okay, because he's pater from everything. It's an interesting shaila. I'll just put on the table. I'm not going to discuss it at great length here. What happens if you're not actually in truth involved in the mace? Like for example, you know, two brothers. The father died, and one brother lives in Baltimore, and he's not coming in for the kavura. So will he still be pater? There's a question like that. It's a big question. In any case, this normal case, all the sons have something to do, so they're going to be pater. It lists these specifically because, although you're pater from all the mitzvahs in the Torah, Kriya Shema, of course, is Kabbalah's Olmo Chushamayim. It's a big deal. And we saw, even yesterday, the sort of the Svar Rav Gamliel, that even though normally a person is pater for a mitzvah, and if he then does it anyways, he's considered like a hediot. We said there's some exemption to Kriya Shema. It's more severe. Kriya Shema is a bigger deal than other things. So you might have thought the same thing. So Kriya Shema also. And as for tefillah, so tefillah, even though it's a derabbanan only, the machlok is actually the Ramban and the Rambam, whether the concept of tefillah itself is a doraisa according to Rambam or just a derabbanan according to Ramban. Either way, being koveya a specific time to do tefillah, like now, is for sure just a derabbanan. Yet tefillah is considered like essential to living, and it's considered rachmim. It's you need it or else, and therefore you might have a havamina. There's an amazing tshuva, again off top, but it's put on the table. Amazing tshuva. Someone asked a center of Moshe, they had a question. They had I guess they had rectal cancer or something like that, and they had the last bit of their intestinal tract removed, so they had no control over their excrement. It would just come out by itself. It's a common problem. So what happens is such people have like a bag attached to them, and they're cured of their rectal cancer, but they don't have the sphincter working properly, and as excrement comes out, it just goes into the bag. It's no big deal. I mean, it's on the leg, and you would be unaware of it. The problem is, you can't say, as we'll see in our parakeet, you can't say a davar shebekedusha in the presence of Kriya Shema or davening, for sure, in the presence of fecal matter. So what are you going to do? So this person, the problem is, they're always, you know, pater, because in any, it's like a makum that's likely to have fecal matter any moment. They don't know what's going to come out. They have no control over it. So that's are they permanently pater from davening forever? So that was the shaila that asked for motion. He paskin, it's like mind-boggling, but gives you an insight into tefillah. He said, you're allowed to because it's otherwise it's pikuach nefesh. You'd be a Jew that doesn't daven is like dead. So you got to daven. I mean that's a halachic psak, an amazing. So the tefillah is a big deal. You're not going to make that tefillah, so even so, you're pater. Sorry? No, so he left the daven be yechidus in his bedroom, whatever it is. But the point is, he has to daven, even though he's, yeah. He's a child with a diaper, he's a menace. Well, anyway. I mean, a tefillin, and also tefillin is connected in many, hermeneutic ways. It's connected exegetically to Kriyat Shema, so it might be considered that's also important too. Okay, so there are parts from all these things. Now, new thought here. At the kavur itself, now we're not talking about the relatives, anybody who's part of the burial procession. They're called the Nosei Hamita, the ones who carry the bed. Mita's a bed, but it means like a bier, B-I-E-R, like where the mace goes in, or here it's like sort of a stretcher in Eretz Yisrael nowadays, but carrying the body. That's a mitzvah doraisa. To be malava the mace is a doraisa, and if they need you to do it, so then you're going to be putter. So it says, Nosei Hamita, the ones who are carrying the mita, and the chilufehen, the alternates, literally from the switchers. Now, what will happen is everyone takes turn carrying a little bit of the weight. So there's like the alternates, they're the chilufehen. Notice the chilufehen, like the, you know, the third string alternates. Everyone gets a chance. So it doesn't matter where you are. Eshlef ne'amita, even if you haven't yet had your chance, literally the guy's before the beer, it hasn't passed them yet. Veshla achramita, or it's passed you. In other words, you had your chance once already. All that stuff, it doesn't matter. This is the guiding principle. Es shalamita tzorach behen. If you're still needed to carry it along the way, you're involved in the mitzvah, and therefore, paturin. Ve'es she'ein lamita tzorach behen. Once you're no longer needed to carry it, so then you're not involved in a critical mitzvah, you can step aside for a minute. Chayavin, you're chayav to stop and do kriya shema, so you shouldn't miss the time. Then you'll rejoin the procession. So the patur of Oath of mitzvah, patur min mitzvah is only going to apply, it's going to come out, when you can get both in. If you're going to lose it altogether, then the proper thing to do is to stop and grab your kriyat shema, unless in doing so you're being in direct conflict with the mitzvah. In other words, if the mita needs you, the mace, so then you're off the hook all the time. Once you're off the hook, if someone else could do the carrying of the beer, so now you can step aside and for a moment not be involved in that mitzvah and get your other mitzvah also of kriyat shema. Okay? Now, ve'elu ve'elu, and everyone in the whole procession is patur min tefillah, are exempt from davening, because davening is just a derabanan, two pshatim, either just a derabanan, so, and the halvas, a mace, escorting the dead is a doraisa, so we're not going to make you stop. Other pshat is that you need to have proper kavana, you have to sit and you need extra kavana to focus on davening, you know, you can't just stop on the side of the road and mumble a few words, so therefore, you're off the hook. Patur. Okay? Now, Mishnah base. This is now after the mace has been buried. Now that the person's been buried, what they used to do is the mourners would come up from the grave and they would basically pass through two rows. When I say rows, I sort of mean like a mob of people that's got like, you know, like the Red Sea parted down the middle. So two, honestly, rows, but two mob, two sides of people. They'd pass through, and each person would sort of express condolences to them and say a particular formula, and that's what the formal process of being Menachem Avil, as they walk away from the grave. So that's also part of the mitzvah. And that let's call it the row, the two rows, the two halves, is called the shura, a row. So it says, Kavru es ha-meis v'chazru. Now, the mourners have buried their dead, and now they're on their way back. No, sorry, and the accompaniers that were with the mourners are now on their way back. They're being chozer, meaning it's called the mita carriers and like the onlookers, the procession. And they're going to now go form two lines for the mourners to pass through them. So on their way back, im yichon lahaskil v'ligmor, if they can start and finish either the first pasuk or the first parsha of Kriyat Shema, as long as they can get to the end of it, mafloka is the whole first parsha, even the first pasuk, actually yigil ashura, before they get to the line and the mourners won't yet be aware that they're doing something else, they're not necessary, yaschilu, they should begin. So if they can shtup in the first parsha or maybe even the first pasuk before they get to the shura, then they should. Vim lav, they can't finish what they started, the first pasuk or the first parsha, lo yaschilu, they shouldn't even start, you're putter, don't fret. Okay, now once they're there in the crowd, ha'omdim b'shura, once they're in the crowd, in the lines, ha'panimim paturim. If you're a panim, you're in the inside of the crowd. That means that the mourners in the middle can see your face. So now it's not nice to be saying Kriyat Shema when they're looking at you. So if you're in the panim, the inner crowd, you're putter. V'chitzonin, if you're on the outside, meaning they won't be able to see you, you're just part of the mass, but you can turn aside and they won't know the difference. The mourner's in the middle. So then, chayav, and now you're chayav to say Kriya Shema. Okay? Good. Mishnah Gimel. General principle everyone knows is that that women are pater from mitzvahs ase shazman grama, positive mitzvahs that are time-bound. And avadim, this is talking about an eved kanani, a non-Jewish eved, is once they become an eved, they're like quasi-Jews, and they're chayav like women also. They have mila and so. Okay? And katanim are children, so these three categories of people, they're peturin mekriya shma umina tefillin. They're all exempt from kriya shma and tefillin. The women are exempt from kriya shma because the mitzvah asa shazman grama. Okay? Straightforward. You might have thought that, again, kriya shma is a big deal. Maybe not, but indeed they are. And also tefillin. Tefillin, again, tefillin is connected to Talmud Torah, to mezuzah. And women are chayav mezuzah, so you might have thought that tefillin would be different. As far as children go, so you have a tremendous insight into chinuch in this Mishnah. The Rav explains that why are children putter from Kriya Shema? Usually you have a mitzvah chinuch. What's the big deal of Kriya Shema? So it says, because the father isn't always around at Kriya Shema time, so then he's putter from teaching the kid ever. Which is like telling you that chinuch requires consistency, right? That's not just a vort. That's saying, since he can't do it right, don't do it at all. So the child is putter from Kriya Shema and tefillin. Children don't do tefillin because they're not trusted to be able to be, it's called shomer their guf, you're not allowed to pass gas when you're wearing tefillin. We don't trust kids to pull that one off, so they don't wear tefillin till the end, right till before poor bar mitzvah. And all those people, the nashim, the vadim, the katanim, they're chayavim b'tefillah, they have to pray. It's not a mitzvah asher sman grama, it's only a derabanan, right? Of mezuzah, and also mezuzah. Of course, mezuzah is also not a mitzvah asher shazman grama. You might have thought since it's connected to Talmud Torah, exegetically, so they might be exempt. And also birchas hamazon, and also in benching. Benching is a more complicated issue. Whether or not women are chayav or not midoraisa. For sure, they're chayav midorabanan. But the pasuk says v'achalta v'tzavata uvirachta. You'll eat, you'll be satisfied, and you'll bench. That's not time bound. Whenever you eat, you got to bench. So it sounds like women are on the hook for that also. The problem is, it goes on to say, Allah aretz hatova ashnasan lach, on the good land that Hashem gave you. And the women weren't apportioned a piece of land of Eretz Yisrael. They don't have their independence. They only get through the father. So, maybe they're exempt. Bench doesn't apply to them. Maybe. But for sure, they're not putzer, because at least midrabanan they're chayav to do it. But the nafkamina would be, of course, if a woman wants to be motzi her husband, that's a big problem. Right? Because maybe she's not mechuyav es. Just a side point worth noting, people wonder about all this, mitzvahs asher shazman grama, so many mitzvahs women can't do. The emes is there are a whopping total of eight, just eight mitzvahs asher shazman grama, only eight, and of those, women do them all anyways, except for tefillin and tzitzis. I'll go through, want to get the eight? The eight are Kriya Shema, Shofar, Sviras Omer, Lulav, Tzitzis, two tefillins, and sukkah. Very good. What? Sukkah. And they do them all. I mean, tefillin and tzitzis they don't do. But anyways, what? So it's a bit of a red herring if that's such a big deal. Right? There are six more mitzvahs that women are exempt from that are not for time-bound reasons. Usually they're technicalities because they're women and certain things just men do. The notable exception is Talmud Torah. Talmud Torah, it's learned out from a pasuk, b'neichem v'lo b'noseichem, teach your children, not your... So that's probably an issue. But the patur of women and learning Torah has nothing to do with being time-bound. Okay, it's a different pasuk. Okay, fine. Mishnah Daled. Okay, Mishnah Daled deals with a new topic here of a Baal Keri. Baal Keri is someone who had a seminal emission, either on purpose or an accident. Ezra was Masakin, it's known as Takanas Ezra, although he made 10 Takanas, this is his famous Takanas Ezra, that a man who has an emission has to now go to the mikveh and be tovel before he can do Torah and Tefillah. Okay? It's not because of Tuma per se, it's that Ezra didn't want Talmud Chacham to be with their wives, like the Gemara says, Ragel Eitel Nashaseim Katana Golem, like chickens all the time, every night. So he made a big hassle to have to go to the mikvah. In those days, the mikvah was cold and far and a big tirchah to deal with, so it wouldn't bother. Right? So that was the idea. Today, the whole thing's not in effect anymore. Halachic bottom line is that there's no... Takanas Ezra is not in effect. The reason why is it's amazing. It's a takana that the tzibor wasn't able to be omer on. It was too hard for people. So if you have the takana was too hard for people, so like because the tzibor couldn't accept it, so like it passed away. Interesting. A person, when all the dust settles, the halachic dust settles, a person wouldn't be crazy to be observant for takanas Ezra, and I think many people in Eretz Yisrael are. Lamaisa. But Me'ikra Din, bottom line is you don't have to be. But this mishnah is going in that world that you do have to be Tovel before you do Torah and Tefillah. So the first reading through, I have to read this mishnah twice. This mishnah gives you a big insight into the downside of putting in punctuation marks and why Chazal didn't, because you'll see why in a second. First reading is like this, how it's probably punctuated in your mishnayos. A bal keri, if a person's a bal keri, so when it comes to Kriyat Shema, he should be Maharer Belibo. He can't say Shema, so he's just thinking in his head. What does thinking in his head do? Certainly the machlokas of if hearer is Kadibur Dami, if thinking is as good as speaking. Bottom line, it isn't. But so if it isn't, so why is he doing it? The answer is, everyone else is being Makabal Omachu Shema, he should be doing something too. He shouldn't sit around like a dope. But he's not Makayim as mitzvah, he's just thinking. If hearer isn't like Dibur, if thinking isn't as good as speaking. And also the Einu Mavarach, and of course he wouldn't make the brachas around Kriyat Shema because he can't do anything. Those are derabanan. Kriyat Shema is deraisa. Lo lefanev lo lacharea. Neither before or afterwards. And v'ala mazon. And as far as benching goes, mevarach la'achrav, that he will say afterwards in his head, behir hur, ve'enu mevarach lefanev. And he won't say anything at all before. No bracha rishona at all. If you're a balkari, you're like off the hook to make you want to... Not off the hook, but you can't. So that pushed you to go to the mikvah. The problem is, many... The Yerushalmi amongst them in the Grah, like, can't swallow this pill that how could Ezra take away your mitzvah's derites of Shema and benching? Like, seems a bit far. So the Yerushalmi is a different reading, the same words, but a different punctuation reading, and the Grah goes with it. They read it like this. It says, Bal Keri, he should be Mahar Belibo Ve'ena Mavarech. He should think in his heart and not say the words of the blessings, not before, not afterwards. No mention of Kriyat Shema at all. But of course the Kriyat Shema is a Doraisa, that he should say. But the Brachas before and afterwards, he should be Mahar Belibo Ve'ena Mavarach, neither before or afterwards. Vala Mazon, same things. He should Mavarach La'achrav, he should say the Birchas HaMazon, that's a Doraisa. Ve'ena Mavarach Lefanav, he shouldn't say the Bracha before, just think it because it's only the Rabbanan. And the Gra goes like that. Yeah, two different readings, you see? Okay.
The Doraisas are doing properly.
According to the Yerushalmi reading, the Dry says you read it. You have to say the words. Yeah, Shema and Benching. Okay,
which part is
it? Well, like Yotze Or and Ava Rabba. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mevarach Lefneim LaAchreim. Rabbi Yehuda rejects this whole. Oh no, sorry, that's a Bracha Rishona, like Brei Pri Hagafen, which is a Derabanan. Right, it's a good question, but the bottom line is brachas rishonos are derabanan in nature. That's the bottom line. Rabbi Yehuda, he doesn't like this whole thing. Rabbi Yehuda says that Takanas Ezra only applies to Talmud Torah. Keep that in mind. You see at the end of the parak. Why? He says Ezra just had an issue of Talmud Torah, but let's call it tefillah generally, Shema and brachas, and so that wasn't included. In Takanas Ezra, and therefore Mavarach Lefneim LaAchreim, do act like normal. The Baal Keri isn't precluded from doing any normal behavior except Talmud Torah. That's Rabbi Yehuda Shita. Okay, Mishnah Hey. So what happens if you were a Baal Keri, high omen b'tefillah, and you're standing in your davening, and you're not supposed to be davening, but you forgot, and then the Nizgar Shu Baal Keri, then you remember, oh my gosh, I'm a Baal Keri. Now what do I do? So Lo Yafsik, he shouldn't stop. Eli Yikatzer, he should shorten his tefillah. The issue is. Me'ikra din, a person could daven as a balkari, just that Ezra said no. So now I'm going to talk to Hashem, it's not proper covenant to just, you know, hang up the phone without saying goodbye. So what you do is you abbreviate the tefillah to make it as short as possible, which means essentially you say the first few words, like Atachonin la'adam das, and then the chesima, Baruch Atah Hashem chonin hadas. So the first words and the last words of each bracha, zoom through to the end. That's called yikatzer here. We'll see later on other kinds of, don't get them mixed up with other abbreviated brachas are different ones, the abbreviated Shmoneh Esreis. Now, new points. This guy is now a Baal Keri in the normal way. He became a Keri at night. Now in the morning, he goes to the mikvah. So Yare Litbol, he goes to the mikvah. Literally, he descends to be Tovel, to immerse himself. And he looks at his clock, as if he had one, and he says, or looks out the window, I guess, and he says, my goodness, the sun is about to come up over the horizon. It's about Kriya Shema time. This Mishnah strongly reinforces the chiyuv, the charchila of saying Kriya Shema before Neitzachama. So he panics, says, oh my gosh, the sun's going to come up, but I'm not ready. So what should he do? Im yachol la'alos l'iskasos v'likros, if he's able to la'alos, get up l'iskasos and cover himself v'likros and say Kriya Shema, all that stuff, ad shlotein etzachama, before the sun comes over the horizon, then indeed yalev yiskasa v'yikra, let him get up, cover himself up and say it. Right? The issue is you can't say Kriya Shema naked. Right? You can't say any Dabar Shema Kedusha naked. It's more than just naked. There's a separate issue besides of being exposed. There's an issue of libo roe se'erva, which means that there's, so to speak, a straight line of sight between your heart and your private parts. So you're also not allowed to say Dabar Shema Kedusha. So, for example, if you're wearing, like, what do they call those things? A jalabiya, what do they call them here? Like, you know, the Arabs with the overgrown nightgowns? Haluk, they call it here? Whatever, you know what I'm talking about. A big night shirt, a day shirt, whatever. So, but you're naked underneath, so even though you're covered from an outside looker, but your heart sees your erva, because you haven't got any underpants on, if you don't. So you can't say Dabar Shema Kedusha. You'd have to, like, put a sash or a belt, or put your arm like this, okay? There has to be a break between your heart and your erva. So that's the issue. He has to be covered himself in that way. So now, Vim Lav, if he's not able to get out and cover himself properly, Yiskasa B'mayim V'yikra. Cover himself in the water and say it. But water, there's a problem. Water is see-through. Transparent water, Liberos Erva. So the Gemara says, it means there has to be turbid water, you know, like a cloudy water. And if not cloudy, he has to kick up the sand, the dirt, and make it murky. Otherwise, he can't say it. Okay? So what will happen is, basically, the water up top will be like a break between... break between his erva and his lathe. The water will be two zones and a murky thing between. Okay? So I have to cover myself up. But all that said, you can never say Dabar Shema Kedusha in a smelly place. Or filthy place. So first we talk with smelly. He says, Avalo yiskasa, don't cover yourself up, lo b'mayim haraim, not in smelly water. Water ra, of course, means bad, but it means smelly. Velo b'mayim mishra, and not in soaking water. That's talking about soaking flax. What happens is, if you want to make linen, the way you do it is you take flax and you put it in water and it rots. It needs to rot first. Well, after it rots, then you can get the fibers out and make the fabric, the linen fabric from it. But decomposing flax, I guess, stinks. So it says you can't say it in presence of Mea Mishra because it stinks. So I always had a question, like, once you can't be around smelly water, so then who cares why Mea Mishra different? What's the extra chiddush there? So I wanted this for a long time. So Daniel Spentner told me an answer. I like it. But if it's true, it has very wide ranging nafkaminas. He wanted to say that in those days, Mea Mishra was like a common smell. Like, you know, they're all soaking flax all over the place. So you smell everywhere. So you get used to it. So even though it stinks, but you're used to the smell, so you might think, since it doesn't bother you anymore because you got used to the idea of it, so now it's mutter. No, it's still usser. So by extension, you're on a farm, and you know when you first get to the farm, the place stinks, right? You smell the manure. Then you get used to it. If you've been on a farm while it doesn't bother you anymore because you're used to it. So if that's true, what he said, it would come out that the point is, if something stinks objectively, who cares if it's not bothering you anymore? Because that's what happens, right? You become desensitized to it. You still can do it if it objectively smells. And therefore, it's kedai, if you're not sure if it smells, ask someone else, hey, does it smell here? Because you might get used to the smell. Okay? Now this Mishnah is a tough read. What happens is, that's the end of it's a new point. I know you have a comma there in your Mishnayos, as if the next words are connected, but they're not connected. It's a chsuri mechsra, it's missing words here. And the Vahachi Ketani, this is what you should be reading. It says, now, what about not smelly water, but urine? We change topics to urine without warning you. And as far as urine goes, right, you can't say Kriya Shema by urine, ad yitol l'sochen mayim, until you pour water into it. Right, it's a hechrach that way, because pouring a little water into a stinky, how much you have to pour an ocean into I don't know what, a stinky mikveh to make the smell go away. The point is, urine, if it's on the floor, has the status of urine, and it's not appropriate to say Kriya Shema in front of urine. You have to be mevatel the status of it as urine, which means for each urination, like, you need to put in a revius of water. And that will be mevatel, let's say, I don't know if it's the color, whatever it is, but you change it to just being water on the ground instead of being urine. And at that point, you could say Kriya Shema in its presence. So if two people went in the corner, you need to have two reviuses of water. Okay? V'kama yarchik mehemu min atzoa, and once you've got the urine there that's been diluted, urine there, or fecal matter for that matter, and some shatim say mehem is referring back to smelly water, whatever it is, arba amos. You have to distance yourself from the smell for amos. There's a machlokas, but bottom line, halach lemaisa, if you have a source of filth that's making a stink, you have to be dalad amos, which is like, say, between 6 or 8 feet away from where the smell ends. So a dirty diaper, you can't just be six feet away from the dirty diaper, you got to be 6 feet away from where you can't smell it anymore. Okay? And all this applies if you don't see it. But you can never, ever say a davar shel kedusha if you can see fecal matter in front of you. Right? If you can see it, then you can't say it. And that's relevant to, you know, if you're walking to shul, you're very likely to have, let's say, animal doo-doo on the ground. It's a big problem. It's a big problem. You got to look. Okay? Yeah, if it all, basically all animal feces isn't considered to smell, unless it does. So as long as you don't see it, you're good, right? But human fecal matter is more gross than you have to see an extra 4 amos away. Yep. Okay. I don't think it usually smells, does it? If it does, then it does. Okay. If it does, then it does. But that's any sticky thing. Okay. Good. Mishnah Vav. Yeah, it's a din of tzoa until it's so dry that it's like, if it gets dry enough, the Gemara says that like if you like throw it, it's like, you know, it's like dust, yeah, it crumbles, and then it's like considered, it's, but as long as there's some moisture there, it's considered still feces. Okay, Mishnah Vav is it's a fascinating Mishnah. The issue I said about the Baal Keri is it's nothing to do with Tumah and Tahara. It has to do with a special thing. We don't want people to be with the wives all the time. So the question is, but at the same time, they're like, the dinim are like overlapped. It's you're going to the mikveh to become tahor from the tumah of keri. Semen. Semen is matama person by coming into contact with it, b'maga, just if it touches you. And b'pashas, by a man, it actually is, there's a separate issue of the semen being matamim as like by it coming out. Like not the fact that he had the emission, not the fact that it necessarily touched him. I don't know. You put in a catheter, let's say, you know what I'm saying. So it would still be matama, you bapashtas. Either way, so to get rid of that tumah, you go to the mikvah. The question in this Mishnah here is, what happens if you have a separate tumah, which is going to be sticking around with you, that the mikvah won't help you to become tahor? So in other words, you go into the mikvah because you're a keri, but you're also a different kind of tumah, and that kind of tumah is not going to be gone. So the example, the first example here is a zav. A zav shara keri. If a person was a zav, truth is, not for now, but there's different kinds of zavin, depends how many times he had this. A zav is a man who has a different kind of emission. It's not seminal. Many translate it as gonorrhea. Either it is or it isn't. But it doesn't come from when the aver is erect. It like leaks out of you, drips out of you. It's different than the Gemara describes. Doesn't look exactly like semen. I don't know what. Okay, it describes what color, a different kind of white, whatever it is. So a person who's a zav and sees a zav more than once, it's a zav that needs to have 7 days before it can become tahor. So in the middle of 7 days, he also has a seminal emission. So now what? If he goes to the mikvah, he'll become like addressing the kind of Ezra. He'll still be tameh. So should he even bother going to the mikvah? Does he have to go to the mikvah? And that's the question. And similarly, Anida, a regular woman who has a menstrual cycle, she's now tummy for 7 days, Bidoraisa, and in the middle of those 7 days, she was poleta shechvazera, shapalta shechvazera. Polet means to like emit, literally. Point is that I told you that being in physical contact with semen is matama you. So even though tumor that's inside of you isn't matama, but what will happen is, over the next up to 3 days, so that's Chazal say until 3 days, it's considered still able to be mazriya, can still fertilize, hasn't been ruined. So if it leaks out of her, so on the way out, it's going to touch her again, and if it touches her, it makes her tummy, and she'll be contacting semen, which is going to be like Tekanas Ezra. So you see, Tekanas Ezra applies to women also. You see that right here, right? So she's an Ida, and she can now be, she's a Poleta Shechva Zera, so she can go to the mikvah and get rid of the Ezra, to cut his Ezra part of the issue, and then she could now, no pun intended really, she can now get rid of the prohibition of Torah and Tefillah. Does she have to? And similarly, the third case is a Misha Meshes. Here you got a woman who, first, it's a biggest chiddush, she's a Misha Meshes, means she had relations, so now she's become Tamei, she came in contact with semen, and then, before she goes to the mikvah, she ra'as anida. That night, let's say, she starts to bleed, so going to the mikvah won't help. The bigger chiddush here, conceivably, she could have gone to the mikvah and not become tum before she became anida. Even so, in all those cases, tzrich and tevila. Tanakhama says, no, before you can do Torah and tevila, you need tevila. And Rabbi Yehuda's poter. Rabbi Yehuda says, not necessary. Says, if you can't get the tumah off of you, then you don't have to go to the mikvah. Now, I'll remind you, by the way, that Rabbi Yehuda was the one who said before that Tekanas Ezra only applies to Talmud Torah. So, it's going to come out here that Rabbi Yehuda is talking only about Talmud Torah, even, and saying a woman is chayv in Tekanas Ezra unless she can't get rid of it. Which means, you see that, and this is a springboard for the issues about women saying Birchas HaTorah and their chiyuv of Talmud Torah and so on. You see from this Mishnah here that women have some chiyuv of Torah, and that's right, and they wouldn't be able to learn if they're holding by Tekanas Ezra. Okay, fine.